There's so many factors. And I mean, that also then that adds into the exhaustion of working from home and meetings. So now it's not just meeting. Now I'm looking at myself and like, oh gosh, it's been a rough day in quarantine. And everyone else, you know, can see it. And then you're looking at theirs and you're trying to pick up on these like smaller movements or, you know, normal indicators. And I think that's where you definitely, like for me, the way I normally run meetings is we have to have a clear understanding of why we're here, what we're hoping to accomplish. Do we have all the people we need in the room? Too many, too little? And really, I don't think most meetings, unless it's something that's more like workshop related, you're really sussing something out or maybe some level of prototyping, they shouldn't last more than 15 minutes.
Are you new to working from home? Maybe you're figuring out how to manage a distributed team. Are you homeschooling your kids while trying to get something, anything else done? You've come to the right place. Work Life at Home talks with both newbies and experts as we explore the tools, tips, and techniques that will help you make the most of this new way of working. I'm Josh Freeman. Welcome home. My guest today, Erica Abrams, is very busy and pretty awesome. Until just moments ago, she was lead executive producer and director of production in North America for Encore VFX, who provide post-production services and visual effects for shows like The Flash, Veep, House of Cards, Homeland, American Horror Story, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. She's on the visual effects committee for the Emmys and works on the LA Design Festival. She's also a Freeverse board member of Get Lit Words Ignite, an organization that uses poetry to increase literacy, empower youth, and inspire communities. And she's on the advisory board of the LA chapter of AIGA, the American Institute of Graphic Arts. Erica ran a team of 300 employees in three locations: Los Angeles, Vancouver, and Atlanta. I have no idea how she managed to do all that, especially from home, but we're about to find out. Erica Abrams, welcome to Work Life at Home.
Thank you.
My first thing I'd like to do is talk about how things were prior to lockdown, prior to the pandemic, and just how you were working at that point, just the normal setup. What was your life like back before all that?
I had an office in Burbank and my hours were roughly my in-office hours where I had to have like feet on Burbank soil was about 10:30 in the morning to about 7 at night, something in that range. Mm-hmm. My day usually began a little bit earlier than that just because we have an Atlanta office. And so it was, you know, phone calls back and forth with other locations as well. And my day is made up of, we didn't have a very robust management team. So I really shouldn't have had 300 people reporting, you know, directly into me. Mm-hmm. And there should have been a team of people, but there wasn't. So, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was organized chaos in a way. So it was a lot of time spent, interacting with corporate finance, human resources, production planning, production management, engineering, operations. It kind of encompassed everything. So it was a lot of moving parts, which was interesting. It was a wonky puzzle. And in the middle of all of that was a sea of creatives, all my, you know, peeps. So no day was exactly like, you know, the one before, the one after, but it was definitely interesting.
And then
the pandemic washed over the land.
Indeed. And how did that change things?
Well, I was finally able to take a vacation. I was going to go surfing in Costa Rica. I scheduled it. And before I left, just it felt, you know, watching the news, it's like, well, let's prep. I went to my creative director and was like, you know, I think we really need to look at bringing some amount of, we need to talk to engineering about what we can do if we have to go to a work from home scenario. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't where it had reached U.S. soil in a tangible way where people were really registering it at that point. And so it was kind of dismissed. And we, well, no, I don't think we need to do that. But more so because the industry itself, this has been a longstanding question and it's been a longstanding no. Because of security protocols that are in place from the client side, from the studios, it just wasn't feasible with what we were required to meet. So I went off to Costa Rica. I surfed the first day. I got further than I wanted. And after that, I just did massages and drank mojitos. But I was there at surf camp for 6 days. I came back. And at that point, it was where everyone was starting to have to self-quarantine if they had traveled internationally. Mm-hmm. And so I went home and started working from home. And then within a couple of days, LA itself had shut down and everyone got sent home. So then it turned into how do we transition all of this?
Yeah.
And the plus and the privilege of living in the U.S. is most people in that salary range have home setups. They have a computer at home. They have a robust internet connection and connectivity. So it basically was a scenario where they're able to like log in, and also the studios relax some of their safety protocols. But we were able to ensure that there wasn't a sharing of media. There wasn't an ability to record screens. There wasn't, no media lived at anybody's house. Essentially, they were dialing into a central location. And that's how people are able to work. And we're still able to protect all of the intellectual property and everything else.
But those files are massive, right, to work on. I mean,
they're massive, but they don't have to. They're not actually transferring those files because those files don't go to their homes.
Okay.
You know.
So they're creating this stuff sort of virtually in a way.
In a way.
And then it gets actually rendered onto the media itself on a computer back at the office
at a secure site. At a secure site.
Okay. Got it.
So so that is what enabled us to move forward and also, you know, meet and maintain the integrity of all the security protocols that are necessary in order to complete the work and to ensure there aren't any leaks and, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
And it took about a week and a half. And to be honest, it doesn't come down. A me person isn't the person that's really important in that situation. It really comes down to engineering talent and efforts. And it's a more a technological ask at that point because it's getting everybody.
And a fast one.
Oh, yes. I mean, yeah. We have an amazing head of engineering that. I mean, he's just like the loveliest person, but also I don't know when he ever sleeps, ever. And he's Canadian, so he's always calm, which is like lovely. Just the nicest man. And so we were up and running with a little bit over a week. I mean, there's definitely some hiccups here and there. And prior to us moving over in the couple of days between me returning from Costa Rica and then LA shutting down, we started telling our staff, like, look, if we have to go from work from home to work from home scenario, please look at your internet connection, because at some point everyone's going to be calling Charter or Spectrum or whomever their providers are asking for upgrades, get ahead of the curve. And so they were able to do that. And most of them had, you know, something that was fast enough to begin with anyway. And also that's, I think, a reflection of creatives. You know, they're working on their own creative work at home. So some, and a lot of them are into gaming, you know, so there is some like overlap in that regard, which was really helpful for the transition.
Yeah, it's just a very technologically oriented business. And that makes it possible for this to work.
It does. It does. The challenge, though, is if we or a company has a heavy reliance on Indian facilities, like when they shut down those facilities, the employees didn't have access to internet at home. Like they didn't have home computers.
Right.
So then that challenge became like, depending on how interwoven they were in the production process, then that becomes an additional challenge as well. If those companies or entities are forced to, you know, close down their main facility and still want to, you know, be productive how do you do that? And yeah. what's the delay? The delay is huge because now you're, some of the people's homes weren't really near where they worked. Their homes were in the countryside mm-hmm. and they were just more, you know, had a sleep arrangement where they were close to their work sites. And I, neither place had internet connection nor the equipment. So, that became like another challenge to factor in when you're looking at meeting production schedules, especially relative to air dates.
And were they able to deal with that challenge? Did they just move the work to someplace that had computers or what happened?
I mean, India, well, we ended up splitting it. Like we had a large enough workforce that we were able to reabsorb some of the work and split it between different approved sites.
And you said it ebbs and flows anyway, right?
It ebbs it's and the flows nature and also, of it. Yes. Well, and also I think the plus with Encore being Encore is it's part of a larger conglomerate, Deluxe Creative Services or Creative Media Services. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of shared resources that that company as a whole is able to easily pivot, you know, between entities. Mm-hmm. So that was extremely helpful, I think, with our transition in particular.
So now that this is all, I assume by now, settled down
yeah.
and you were dealing with your teams working at home. Mm. What was their response to that situation? Were they enjoying it? Were they frustrated? How were they feeling
well,
about all that?
Well, it was kind of like there were stages. There's the initial stage where you're really happy that you have a job, right?
Right.
Because yeah. everybody else is, you know, all these other people are losing their jobs and, you know, you have rent and mortgages and children and, you know, elderly parents are, you know, all your life's responsibilities. So at the forefront, they were really thankful for that and grateful. And I don't know that that part ever went away. It's just other things got added onto it. Then I think it's an important note. It's not really work from home in the way that a freelance artist works from home. So that's a decision that person makes on some level. They've set up their home to reflect that decision. They have a workspace that is created to their preferences. They're able to structure their day in a way that reflects, you know, their ability to make money, but also to build in their own breaks. If they want to do like yoga at 11, they can figure out how to do yoga at 11 or, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
When you transition with at such a rapid pace from a more traditional workspace, I think some of the expectations that are then forced, some of the structures that are maintained become really exhaustive and intrusive into people's mm-hmm. home lives. So for us, it was, okay, so our day starts at 10 officially and it ends at 7 or whatever it is, right? And you have a half hour at lunch. Okay, let's say that everyone gets an hour for lunch because we need a longer break. And we want to allow people to visit with their children because people are homeschooling. There's all these other factors to figure right. out if they need to go grocery shopping or whatever the case may be. And you could take that hour long break between this certain time frame in the middle of the day. But everything outside of that, there was this expectation that you're there, you're at your desk, you're engaged. And that's not the same as it is when you're in a traditional workspace. In your traditional workspace, you're at your desk, but you're able to kind of like break your focus by talking to people next to you. You go get a cup of coffee. You're able to interact, right? And release mm-hmm. some of that focused, air quotes, productive energy. And without that, and also people are able to go to your desk and go, oh, they're not at their desk. So they can walk away and they find you in a different way or at a different time. But if there's this expectation that you're there and you're locked in between the certain time period. And then in the backdrop, you have people losing their jobs. So, you know, you want to be there because you don't want to ever be seen as though you're not engaged and being productive. So there's this extra pressure. And then there's just the nature of the pandemic and the state of the world. I think it was really hard as time went on for people to figure out what to do and how to adjust for that. And then to what degree were they allowed to adjust? Because mm-hmm. people kind of just fall back on the things that they know. The things that they know are all in-person, structure-based methodologies, and those don't always work.
Right. What's interesting listening to this, so, you know, I have a little tiny company and all my staff has been working from home forever. I mean, that's just how we set the whole thing up. So for 3 decades, I think this has been going on. But I'm watching my wife, who is in the same situation as what you're describing, and she works for a larger company and it's very formal and they work in the offices and they have the exact same security requirements that you're talking about because it's in the motion picture industry. And so she does subtitles. And so all of that security stuff is an issue and they have to VPN and go in. We had to set her up with her own, like a separate computer that actually worked on that system because her Mac wouldn't work. And she has to clock in and clock out and she takes a lunch break. And honestly, it is the weirdest thing to me as somebody who's worked at home for a long, long time to see that way of working at home because it's so structured. And I'm wondering, will large companies at some point stop worrying about whether the person's at their desk and start worrying about whether they're getting their work done, however they get their work done? And do you think that's a reasonable expectation or is that not something that a manager can realistically deal with?
I think it is something a manager can realistically deal with, but I think there's two different types of work. There's work where you need somebody to do the same thing over the course of time or something very procedural. So then time becomes something that is very integrated into productivity and how you measure it. Mm-hmm. And then you have someone who it's not so much time-based. Like if I do it or you do it, it might take me a half hour and it takes you 20 minutes. It doesn't really matter. It just needs to be done, you know?
Right.
But
right.
Someone doesn't necessarily have to track our time for it. And there's no like expectation you're paid for your expertise, especially relative to California labor law. It's a designation between exempt and non-exempt employees. So I do think it will require management to really be able to properly gauge individual employee skill sets so they can hold people accountable, but also have a clear and fair expectation for their productivity and what they expect to see. And I think it'll all rely on something that I think is really difficult for people who just become managers, and that's communication, being clear, concise, motivating, and kind. Like it's not just a matter of, I want to see these things by the end of the day. End of the day is 6 o'clock. It's how are you communicating that? And how are you adjusting your communication style relative to who you're speaking to so that they actually can hear and interpret and synthesize what it is you're asking of them. And that differs depending upon, is it procedural? And it's just, you know, do this many things of this thing in this amount of time, or is it something that's a little bit more nebulous? So I think it's very doable, but there's a necessary shift in the skills that are required of people who manage.
That's really interesting. Yeah, hadn't thought about that. But you have to have much more, it seems to me, you have to have much more empathy to do it this way. To do it when people are working at home, you have to understand what their lives are like and what their context is and create an expectation of productivity that's around that stuff that allows for that. It allows them to be human. You know,
right.
They're not machines that clock in and clock out and just do stuff. You know, they're people and they have things to deal with. So,
and where do you have structure? You know what I mean? Like, do you just put structure in for the sake of saying we have structure, or is it necessary? And if so, why? You know?
So yes, I think, exactly.
I think that's going to be an interesting thing. I think it's going to require a lot of self-examination and really kind of a cost-benefit analysis for what seems to be small decisions, but collectively they end up being much larger, having a larger impact, I think, than people actually want to give them credit for.
And they change employee satisfaction. They change employee loyalty. They change the sense of being part of a team. There's like so many little human tweaks, I guess, you know, little human factors that affect the way that people interact in a work environment, and that you can get around if everybody's hanging around the water cooler, you know, together. It alleviates a lot of that. It's not the same thing, but you need to build it in when people are working at home.
Well, and how do you transfer the culture, you know, that people work so hard to create in a physical environment? How do you shift that to something that could be maintained virtually? Because it's an oranges to kumquat, I think, conversation. Similar, but not the same, you know?
Yeah.
And it comes down to, I think, smaller, decisive, strategic actions that don't feel contrived.
Right. There's a book about this, an interesting book about this, that Jason Fried, who's the founder of Basecamp, wrote, called Remote. And it's about developing a remote workforce. Their company has been a remote workforce, I think, since they started or close to it. And he has some really interesting thoughts about how to manage things professionally as a corporation, basically, you know, that way transcend anything that I'm doing with my little company, but would definitely relate to what you're doing as a manager of a larger workforce. And it's much more, you know, it's more formalized and it's really well thought out. And they also just released an ebook about this. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And I've mentioned this book before. I'm kind of a nut about that particular thing for some reason. It really resonated with me. It's a really nice idea and it's, you know, very well articulated. All right. How are you managing people before you, in terms of the tools you were using, the way that you ran projects, the software, the time management stuff, the project management tools? Has that changed as a result of people working from home, or are you using the same tools?
Not really. There was an addition of a different chat software that was introduced when people moved to work from home versus the what we had already established as our internal chat software when we were on site. I'm not super pro that idea, just because I think, just generally speaking, you have to ask yourself why you're adding things in, you know, like, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? And are you not able to accomplish it with the resources and tools you're currently utilizing? If not, why? If it's just a matter of people aren't using the tools in the way that they should or could be, well, then they just need to adapt their behaviors. So I think when a mistake that we made, in my opinion, was that we had too many avenues of communication. We had 200 people in Burbank itself. So that's a really large group of people that takes up a large space. So people were accustomed to texting each other using their phones. Okay, so now we have text, we have phone, we have internal chat, we have a database project management software that you can also leave messages for people. You have email. Now we have Zoom. And then we added in yet another communication pathway. That's seven different avenues of communication, which I think just adds to the intrusiveness. Like once you are at home, it's just like everywhere you go. Like you can't go to the kitchen, because if you go to the kitchen, they didn't get you with everything that's attached to your computer. Now they can text you or call you. So I think the more refined that you can have communication, I think the more structured you could have it. And I think you have to let go of the thought of, well, if we were in the office, I could say, hey, can you meet me in my office in 10 minutes? Yes. Are people getting paid for their time? For sure. But it's a different dynamic when you're in the middle of being highly engaged with all these other pressures and someone's just like, hey, can you come to this Zoom in 10 minutes? Sometimes it's okay, you know, but why not have where you can put structure in and is necessary and helpful, do so. But also keep in mind that it should be kept really refined.
Right. And simplified, right?
I mean, super simplified.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have that same problem. Fortunately, I don't think we have quite as many channels as you guys did. But it is a tough thing to track stuff and to know where a communication showed up. And in a perfect world, you'd have one project management system and everybody would communicate within it. I think that's what actually Basecamp 3 is supposed to be, but I don't know. We diddled around with that and didn't switch over. But so we're using Slack and Basecamp and email and texts, I would say. And that there is a sort of a hierarchy, which is useful, which is Basecamp is kind of the documentation area where you have a decision or approve for something that needs to be reviewed. It goes in there. And Slack is for more like just chit chat. You know, it's like it's sort of lighter level conversation. And then texting seems to be for emergencies. So if you can't reach somebody, you reach out on text, but you don't have any kind of extended work conversations on text.
Right.
And so at least, you know, there's a couple channels, which helps. And then email, of course, God knows, is like you can't get away from it.
But so, I think as long as everyone's clear on the purpose of each avenue of communication, that's key. I'm just not in favor of, you know, let's add on this because it has this cool feature. Well, do we need the cool feature? And if the answer is yes, and do we maybe get rid of something else where there's a redundancy?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think some of these decisions are made just because everything happened at such a rapid pace. And we're not an industry that traditionally entertains or engages in a work from home scenario. We certainly use freelancers, but then it's treated as piecework. It's not that you're interacting with them throughout the day. It's very traditional in that way. Do these things. I need them by this time. This is what it needs to look like. Okay, great. And it comes back. I think another thing is people default to what's closest to them and most convenient. So you're looking for comfort and connectivity to the people that you get along with really well. You know, your work friends. And then those become the people you also talk about all the work things with. So things where maybe you need to include other people in the conversation, they're not being included because you're already talking to someone, that energy is now being spent, the information is being relayed, though not always to the most appropriate person. And it's just a matter of comfort and convenience. So I think it just takes a different level of awareness and self-critique to really pull it off successfully, no matter the size of the group, you know, because within a larger, like 300 person company, there's, you know, subgroups that have different purposes or departments. So they have their own way that they need to manage things as well.
Yeah. Let's talk about your own situation within this environment. You're working from home. Sounds like you're not really used to working from home particularly, and you had to get yourself set up fairly quickly. And I am assuming, like a lot of people, you're also pretty isolated. Are you? I have no idea if you have a partner, if you are living with anybody, if you're married, or what your deal is. So,
well, during the course,
do you live by yourself?
I don't live by myself. So a couple months before the stay-at-home orders, my daughter, who's 24, moved out, which is great, and it's fine. And then concurrent with that, my fiance moved in during the quarantine.
Wow.
So it was a lot of shifting. And then we both had to start working from home. So he works for Netflix. I worked for Deluxe Encore. Mm-hmm. And Netflix was much more nimble, and they were already set up for some amount of work from home, even though they had physical locations. So it wasn't so foreign to him to be home and be on Zooms. And they were accustomed to, you know, meeting in that way and communicating with that in mind. But it's completely different when you have two people and now they have to both be here. And where I once thought two bedrooms was fine for two people, well, not if they both have to actually have home offices, not just a room with a bed for guests and a desk, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's been, you know, a factor. Definitely. It's been a lot to get used to. Not the him being here, but just like, where are we? We talk about them. We're like, okay, so what time do you have your Zooms? Okay. So that we're sure to be quiet and not, you know, this isn't the time we're going to do laundry and get a cup full of ice from the refrigerator. I mean, he does. I mean, bless his heart. He gets side eyes sometimes. Like, did you have to sneeze now? Like, it's so loud, you know, but it's just like the nature of people being in the same space. And then it gets into, okay, you can really tell who's accustomed to working from home and who's been kind of forced into it by whatever their Zoom background is. So, you know, if it's just some like weird bedroom, it's like, okay, well, you're new to this. And then you get the people with the really beautifully like curated like background. And like after the whole Obama town hall, like, do I too need tall white bookcases behind me? Maybe.
Yes. Yes,
like everyone has tall white bookcases. Like, this is the background I'm supposed to have to be taken seriously. So now we're trying to figure out, okay, so where can we make space in our space? We could both have designated work areas that we don't have to, you know, shift depending upon the time of day or what's happening with the other person or, you know,
well, whatever. You could use a Zoom background, right?
I could, but it's always, I mean, here's, I'm in visual effects. So those edges are a mess. Like, oh, yeah, you know,
right.
I can't.
Well, you could set up a green screen in your office. That sounds good.
I could, but
and then
it's so
professional
ugly.
Effects behind you.
It's so ugly.
I know. You don't want to stare at a green screen all day.
I don't. And then agree. And then you get into like perspective and scale. Like it's all sorts of wonky. The best idea I've heard is somebody cleaned their living room, took a picture of their living room from where they normally have their camera.
Yes.
And then they use their clean living room background as their Zoom virtual background.
Mm-hmm.
So their living room could be pure chaos, but the scale is all correct and it's still their space.
And the weird edges are just showing more of their living room.
Right.
From the same
right.
angle.
Yeah.
So everything sort of blends together.
It is.
If you're not paying too much attention.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
okay.
It's not bad.
I'll try that. That sounds fun. And then there's lighting. We can get
right.
into that.
Like, do I need a ring light? Well, I do mine in my living room because my living room has great light.
Perfect.
Okay. But then if I go to another room, I look like Alfred Hitchcock because I'm backlit. So, you know, there's so many factors. And I mean, that also then that adds into the exhaustion of working from home and meetings. So now it's not just meeting. Now I'm looking at myself and like, oh, gosh. A rough day in quarantine and everyone else, you know, can see it. And you're looking at theirs and you're trying to pick up on these like smaller movements or, you know, normal indicators. And I think that's where you definitely, like for me, the way I normally run meetings is we have to have a clear understanding of why we're here, what we're hoping to accomplish. Do we have all the people we need in the room? Too many, too little. And really, I don't think most meetings, unless it's something that's more like workshop related, you're really sussing something out or maybe some level of prototyping, they shouldn't last more than 15 minutes. Rare is the one that it actually makes sense. But usually if it goes into 45 minutes or an hour, it's a different conversation altogether. And you have people there that don't need to be there. And you have some people who aren't there that absolutely should. So I think when planning Zoom meetings, that has to be taken into even greater consideration because it's so exhausting for people. Like now we've kind of settled into it to where it's like, okay, are we calling or are we Zooming? Okay, I'll send a link. Everyone's sending links. But, you know, there's the Zooms where it's just friends and you don't have to be on, but not for work. For work, you're always on, you know, and the days are really long. They don't feel like 8 hours. It feels like 10 or 12.
That is totally true. Zoom meetings are so awkward. They're inherently awkward.
It is weird.
And, so they're stressful because of that. You can't just be, you know, you have to be doing something. You have to be paying attention or be on or, you know, people are looking at you or you're looking at yourself the whole time.
And
or
you
whatever's
can't just
going
leave.
On. It's weird. Yeah.
You can't leave like in a physical space. You could say, okay, like you received everything you need to receive. I need to go do something else. Like you feel weird saying that, you know, and like, do you just like disappear? Do you put in the chat, like I have to go? Like where? And the other thing is, where are you going? Everyone knows you're not going anywhere because you're stuck at home. So you can't, you know, do that either.
Yeah.
I think there should be like Zoom best practices maybe.
There probably are someplace. And have you seen the video? Oh God, I think it's done by an ad agency or somebody that simulates a Zoom meeting as an in-person meeting?
No.
It's hysterical. It's so perfect.
Oh, gosh.
I will send you that. It's
That's
brilliant.
Great.
Yeah. All right. So, we've talked about some level of self-care, I suppose. And I have no idea how you're dealing with exercise, sleeping, eating, all that stuff. Is that just, you doing okay with all that? Got any advice?
I mean, initially it was, I honestly felt less stress being at home in a way. It wasn't less, it was just different. It was different. I mean, I certainly was on the, you know, melatonin every night to go to sleep. So I could at least sleep until like 3 a.m. It's just kind of like this. And then right when your body's like, okay, now we're relaxed. My brain somewhere was like, no, we're not. Let's think about everything now. Yeah. And so that was stressful. I started just like walking just to get outside in the mornings, which, you know, was helpful. And then I think, you know, it comes down to like, who are you home with or what is your social situation at home? Yeah. So I get along really well with the person I live with. He's very easygoing, funny. So that makes it so much easier. And
absolutely.
I have like a weekly friend, you know, check in Zoom when I don't have to be, you know, anything but myself for. And I think if you have a couple of those, just kind of maintain some amount of outside interaction, that's been helpful.
It sounds like we're both really lucky. There's a huge rise in domestic violence right now.
Oh my gosh,
from what
right?
I understand. Yeah.
Because well, everybody's child like abuse. Locked like you think about home. All the children that are now trapped at home with their abusers as opposed to being in school. Or then don't have access to food because their meals were coming from school lunch programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad.
That might allow us to get into what's going on right now in the world. Mm-hmm. Because we talked about that sort of, there's a real difference between our sort of privileged home working environment and somebody who's lost their job and is stuck at home.
For sure.
And I think you mentioned the idea of access and the idea that we have this assumption, it's almost a stratified thing where there's people who can, you know, listen to the podcast and make a podcast and talk to their friends and do Zoom and blah, blah, blah. And then there's people who were, I don't know, working in a restaurant, you know, and there's no job and there's nothing for them to do. And I think that massive level of fear and frustration is getting expressed in the violence that we're seeing and in the peaceful protests that we're seeing in different ways. And I'm just wondering if, you know, what you think about that. And as an African-American woman, what's your take on this? How do you see all that?
That's a huge question.
I know. It is a huge question.
Well, I think that what we're seeing is more than just a question of access. I think that if we're talking about a work from home scenario, I think that is definitely a privileged conversation and option and existence, you know? And if we're talking about like, okay, so where now there's going to be a greater digital divide and even relative to the children that you close down schools. Okay, great. Well, and it's all going virtual. Okay, great. So who are the kids that are able to interact and complete their schoolwork and do all the virtual things? They're going to be kids that have a certain level of affluence. So if we're talking about the children who are potentially trapped at home without lunch program, they probably don't have a computer. Or if they do, is it fast enough, new enough? Is the connectivity where it needs to be? Is somebody else in their house needing it? Are there other children who need to use the same computer for schoolwork? There's all these challenges. And then what is the ripple effect of that? So what does that look like when we're talking about professions? And if we're talking about design as a profession, okay, well, if you don't have access to a creative suite, how would you ever design or build a career in that space? If you don't have access to any sort of tutorials, like forget any formalized, let's not even talk about that. Which is any sort of way to interact and being able to work in that direction, it does become a question of access and then it becomes a socioeconomic consideration. As far as what's happening in the world right now and the protests and the riots. There's the riots. I wouldn't even call them riots. They're not riots. It's looting. There's some of that, I think, that's maybe integrated with the protests, but a lot of it looks like it's other people who are just coming in and taking advantage of the situation and, you know, hitting up the nice stores, you know, especially relative to the West Side. Sorry, it's not a lot of Black people breaking into REI vans and Patagonia. You know what I mean?
I've seen pictures. Yes, indeed. There's lots of all kinds of people doing
There's all kinds. And, you know, I worry about the perception of that and how that's muddying the waters of what this is really about. And it's about police brutality. It's about racism. But it's also about racism in ways that I think people don't normally categorize as something that's racist. It's more nuanced. So there's like blatant, right? There's lynchings, there's murders, violence. And then there's the milder forms of racism that people have in their everyday lives. So is it, just speaking from my own experience, like if I'm the only Black woman at this level in my company, then there's a weight that comes with that. Am I capable of my work? Yes. Do I have the experience? Yes. So that's great. But I'm only one, you know, and why is that? Why is that? Especially in a city like Los Angeles, like, is there really not, there are no other people of color that could encompass, you know, that position? I doubt that, you know.
And I doubt that very much. I mean, especially in Los Angeles, which is so multiracial and so multicultural.
Right. Well, and then there's putting people in positions that are people of color. And like the thing I refer to is the United Colors of Benetton. I just remember that ad when I was younger, like in the 80s and 90s.
Me too.
And
yes.
For me at that point, it was revolutionary because you never saw ads, or at least not that I could recollect, where you saw people of so many different ethnicities and nationalities and shades all in one space.
Yes.
Right. And so to me, that is the picture of diversity. And is that what a corporation is chasing, is the picture of it? Or are they really looking for it? And do they value it from the perspective of contribution and inclusion and also allowing power to be attached to it? So it's one thing to put someone in a position that you don't really care about, that is marginalized by nature, or if you're able to marginalize them, but it gives you the picture. You know, you could definitely take the picture that you could send out in the corporate Christmas cards or whatever. But how are you really allowing those perspectives to be expressed? And are you giving them the same space that you encompass? Are you willing to give up some of what feels natural and normal to pull people in and allow them to be themselves and allow their voices to be heard in those spaces? And I think that's some of the day-to-day stuff that's going to be much more difficult for people to look at and recognize and work towards better resolution.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully stated. And I wish, I don't know, I really appreciate your willingness to articulate that and to, and obviously you've thought about this a lot, and I honestly can't say that I've thought anywhere near as much as you have about it, which is probably why we're having these demonstrations, because people like me who are, you know, happy white liberals have this idea that, you know, we're in the post, well, had this idea, I should say, that we're in sort of a post-racist society right now that we've had a Black president. And it's like, it's idiotic. I mean, you can see the evidence all around you, and that level of complacency and that level of just kind of what you said, that level of comfort, you know, is so easy to fall into and so hopeless, I think, for people of color, because it becomes like the air, you know, it's just around you all the time. And you can't, like, you have to deal with it constantly. And the people who you're dealing with aren't even aware that it's a problem or that it exists until suddenly somebody says, hey, wake the hell up. And they take to the streets and they start screaming and yelling and police come out and it gets to be visible.
Well, it's ambient racism, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the easiest way I could describe it. And it's being a person of color. It's like, okay, so do I talk about this now? But then you get the, why does it always have to be about race? Well, yeah. Why does it always have to be about race? You know, but you're not seeing it the way, you're not experiencing the way that I am. And if I express it to you, it's dismissed or it's belittled or it's categorized. Well, you know, life isn't perfect. Yeah. Well, guess what? Let's all just agree that life's not perfect for anybody. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's not perfect for white people. It's not perfect for anybody else. That's your baseline. The baseline is imperfection, but it's imperfect plus. And it's all the pluses that get added onto it. And the frustration is, how do you express it in a way that people can hear it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then for in a corporate environment, like, well, I can't say too much because then I'll be disregarded. But I don't want to not say anything because then I'm not being the person I should be. And it's exhausting. It's exhausting. It's beyond exhausting.
I can imagine.
I mean, I would say like in the last 2 years, I have been, somebody asked to touch my hair and then proceeded to pet me. I was upset because two white people were being rude and really kind of unkind to their two white coworkers. So I was walking to go and see what was going on. And I'm by nature not a loud person. I mean, I have a lot of things to say, but I'm not loud. I'm not an angry person. I don't express anger loudly. I normally quiet. But my face cannot lie.
Yeah.
And someone walked past like, oh, angry black woman. Oh, so now geez. I'm not allowed a full range of emotion. I've been in
conflict. Well, you could just say, yeah.
I could.
There's that.
And then
say,
what?
Yeah. Angry black woman, you're right. And you guys are making asses of yourself and hurting the feelings of this person you're standing next to. And it does make me angry.
And then what?
I don't know.
And then I'm an angry black woman and Erica's irrational and Erica's emotional and.
Oh, God.
So, you know, and it's the holding of those. And those are like minor. Those aren't even the biggest things, but it's the holding of those like smaller. No,
the big thing is you can't go bird watching. You know, the big thing is you can't walk down the street. There's a guy who did an article who was 6'2", you know, athletic guy, right? And he's got a little daughter and he never goes walking in his neighborhood without either his daughter or his fluffy little dog.
Right.
Because if he's just a black guy walking down the street,
suspect.
He looks dangerous and he's suspect. Exactly. And it's just like, come on.
I mean, I've seen both sides in a way because I'm half black and half white.
Yeah.
And my mom's from the Midwest. My dad's from the South and her family. They're all like nurses and professors and teachers. They're there to help, but they're academic in nature.
Which one's white, by the way? Your mom?
My mom. My mom is white.
Yeah.
And I was married to a police officer, LAPD police officer for 15 years.
Didn't know that. Wow.
So I've heard and I've seen different sides. Now, granted, my mother's family, they're all like lovely people. So it wasn't at all the thing where they stopped talking to her or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've definitely been like the only white person in a Midwestern town and everyone's looked at me, you know, I'm not a white person, the only non-white person in a Midwestern town. Mm-hmm. And so I can empathize to a degree with where white people are with this. Mm-hmm. And I can see like, well, I get it. It just has reached a point where it's like, I'm out of care. I just can't care. It's not that it doesn't matter. It's just like, there's something bigger that needs to be dealt with for the benefit of everybody. And I think everyone has been implored for the last, you know, 60 or so years, you know, it's been pretty passive. So I don't know where else it would go but here. I do think it's really hopeful in the way of just the demonstrations are very multicultural. They go beyond the boundaries of the United States. I mean, if we live in a world where they're protesting in Syria and Iran, like, okay, like, what are we doing? Granted, some of them might be politically led. You know, there's a whole other portion of that. But still, I think we really need to take another look. And that's just the nature of evolution and growth in business. You don't have a business plan and you never go back in and adjust it 5, 10, 15 years down the road. Things happen. You have to be able to shift. You have to be able to look at your motivations. You have to look at your goals. You have to look at your processes and see, is this really who we are? And is this going to get us where we want to go? And that's what the country has to do as a whole. And they need to look at the things that they thought were okay 20, 30, whatever years ago, but actually weren't.
Yeah, it changes. Mm-hmm. The world changes.
The world changes. The world stays the same.
As we've seen in the last few months, huh?
Well, I think the world changes, but it stays the same. And I think the frustration is we pretend that it changes, but there are some things that are really horrifying that have stayed the same.
Yes. Well, hopefully this will ratchet it one more notch toward changing, and hopefully a big one. Yeah, it feels like it. It feels like it. It's good. I wanted to ask you about your recent decision to basically resign from your giant responsible job and see what led to that and then where you think you're going to be going from here.
Okay. I enjoyed when I entered the role of director of production, North America, lead executive producer. I had experience for all of my responsibilities, but not at that scale, not at an enterprise level. And it was a challenge. It was really interesting work. It was a very thin management structure. So that allowed for a lot of interaction with different groups within Deluxe and Encore. And it was the refining of our processes. It was also at a point of extreme growth. So when I started, we had around 60 or so employees. We had two locations, but they really weren't interacting with each other. So during the last few years, we've grown from 60 or so employees to three locations. There's a high level of integration. Their shared resources, and was putting together the puzzle of all of that with finance, with engineering, with human resources, with production relative to client ask scope of work. And it was incredibly interesting. And at this point, it would just be the maintenance of it. And it just reached a point where I'm just not interested in the maintenance of it. You know, I don't think that I would grow any more. I mean, certainly I would have there be new issues or challenges, but it would kind of like, all right, well, you know, start at square three instead of square two. Mm-hmm. You know, so I thought that I wanted to go beyond that. Also, I've had a pretty long run in visual effects, and I think that I want to transition to something that's a different creative space. It definitely has to be a creative space. And I think I just need new challenges. That's really the bottom line of it. So I opted not to return next season. Mm-hmm. And I finished out this season, opted not to return next season so they can figure out what they're going to do in the coming months with enough notice. And I'm right now just decompressing and walking my neighborhood and, I don't know, eating inordinate amounts of cheese.
And figuring out what to do.
And I'm starting to put together some structure for a consultancy, where basically I go into spaces and I advise them in the way of, okay, so let's basically doing all of the work that nobody has the time to do because they're working. You know, you're in your company and it's oh, this would really be great. This always gets in the way. We need to figure this out. It's always on somebody's to-do list, but no one ever has the time to do it. And it's coming in and seeing where there's some silos that need to be broken down, where there's some processes that need to be refined, and helping companies figure that out. And then I leave. So it's just like Mary Poppins. I don't need to stay. I make it better. I go. So my interest is in making companies better. And I've been doing it for the last like year or so, from some smaller creative spaces. So that's been really fulfilling and interesting, and doing some workshops and team building, culture building initiatives for companies as well. So some combination of that, or maybe I go to a different brand and do the same work for a bit longer. Or, I don't know. I'll figure it out.
I have no doubt. I'm sure you'll figure it out. And somebody will be very lucky to have you help them figure their stuff out.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's great. Thank you. This has been one hell of a nice conversation. I really appreciate it. It's far beyond what I hoped for. And I really thank you. It's just great.
Yeah.
So tell people where they can find you online if they want to know more.
My name is Erica Abrams, E-R-I-K-A-A-B-R-A-M-S. And it's just first name, last name.com. So ericaabrams.com.
All right. Thanks again. And I'm sure we'll see each other soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for now. If you're new to working from home, you might want to check out worklifeathome.com, where you'll find articles, show notes, and, best of all, a community where you can ask questions and get some answers from people who've been doing this a while. We'd love to see you there. And I would be thrilled to hear what you think and find out who else you'd like to hear from on the show. You can email me at josh@worklifeathome.com. If you're enjoying Work Life at Home, please do let your friends and coworkers know so they can subscribe. Thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.